The first question was on the use of private contractors or in-house staff to do various work for the council.
Government mean that we are required to assess whether that model of service provision is the most effective and efficient, which leads us into those kinds of conversations. Whereas when you're just talking about the ordinary kind of business as usual of council, those are operational decisions that don't happen in the council chamber. They happen with the chief executive and staff. So there isn't that kind of transparency as to what we think effective and efficient provision of services is. So it's a really good question, and I think one that all councils grapple with. CCOs give us one particular way of addressing that, but it's a question that we do try hard to address more widely. I mean, Palmerston North is quite unusual in that we have a big in-house team. We're the last council in New Zealand that still delivers our own rubbish services. Nobody else does that. They all contract it out. Well, some people might say that is unnecessarily expensive to do it in-house, but it means we actually get to control the service provision that we have. So there are, I suppose what I'm saying, there are pluses and minuses both ways. What's important is there's a way of assessing what will give us the best outcomes in terms of how much it costs and also the service that we get. Right, that's that one. The river could be a great asset for Palmerston North. What possible opportunities in future could there be for development of weirs, lake-type waterways for rowing, yachting, boating? Has this been investigated ever? I can hear the grumbling already. Has this been investigated ever? Long term, we wouldn't want development that later would be submerged. So I'll probably start at the end of that sentence to go that the Manawatu River is a hugely dynamic waterway. And anybody who recalls the 2004 floods particularly is very aware of how much that river moves and how fast and dangerous it becomes. And just two summers ago, we had that series of tragic drownings in the Manawatu River, which was at quite low level but came after high rainfall. So I think that's given us all a healthy respect for that awa, even if we didn't have it before, we do now. And there's a whole kind of movement in the environmental sphere about not trying to manage our waterways, not trying to tell water where it should go, but working with the water. And in fact, I was over in Hawke's Bay a few months ago as part of my local government zone three responsibilities, and hearing from the Hawke's Bay in Cyclone Gabrielle, obviously they had a huge amount of water come through their region. And one of their rivers, it might have been the Tukituki, or I might have that wrong, but a river historically had been diverted, 30, 40 years ago, had been diverted and put into a new path. And when Cyclone Gabrielle came through, the river went back to its old pathway, which spoke to me about how water has memory and how you can't bet against water. Water will always win.
Yeah.
So in terms of the river, absolutely, it's a massive asset for our community. I think what we've seen over the last 10 years or so, roughly the time I've been on council, not saying those two things are related, is that we've turned our community back to our river and started to use it as a recreational resource in terms of the walkway along Side End, encouraging activity in there, like park run, for example. But we have to be really careful about what we do in the floodplain. A, we don't own that space. Horizons Regional Council looks after it, and they won't give us permission to do permanent structures in the floodplain because it would just get washed away, and then that would put bridges at risk, which we've all seen recently. So yes, we want to use it, yes, we need to respect it and honour it, but we need to be really careful with what that looks like, and whether that's at risk to property or to human life, we've got to be careful. Righto? There's a wall in the circle of the Regent that started leaking seriously during the Solo Mio concert 3 years ago. It is still a mess. It looks unprofessional. When is it going to get repaired? I love the Regent. This is sad. Thank you for all of those things. Honestly, the day, in fact, the night of that Solo Mio concert, which I wasn't at, people were sending me, people were sitting up in the gods up there, were sending me pictures of the wall going, what on earth is happening? And we were very quickly on to David Walsh, who's the manager of the Regent, and then through council, because council owns that building, so we're the landlord, So those things are our responsibility to go, what on earth is going on? Why is there an internal waterfall in the Regent? On first bounce, it sounded like the Regent needed a new roof, which we were all a little bit about, because that's a great deal of money and it's a heritage building and it is also earthquake prone and the problems just go on and on. When we investigated, this is hideous, but there was an internal gutter there on that part of the building. It was full of dead pigeons. And that's what caused the failure, which speaks to the importance of your maintenance budgets. Now, when we cut budgets, things get missed. And that was something that just hadn't been done. That gutter had not been cleaned out. And as a result, it caused a huge mess, which we fixed the problem. It doesn't leak anymore because we cleaned the dead pigeons. But we still have yet to revisit the paintworks all bubbled off the wall down there. It is a mess. I absolutely agree. The Regent Theatre is earthquake prone. In the long-term plan, that is the first of the 26 buildings that council owns that are earthquake prone. The Regent is the first one that we're proposing to fix, and part of that will be doing the remedial work that that section of the roof needs, as well as doing the work that means the facade won't fall off in an earthquake. So the immediate problem has been fixed. We learned some lessons about maintenance as a result of it. There is a long-term plan to make sure that that kind of thing doesn't happen again and protect that asset for future generations as well. Now, there was a question in conversation, thank you for the lovely chats in the break, about how big a proportion of council expenditure is all of this stuff that I've talked about today. And the answer to that is quite complicated, but in terms of day-to-day operational expense, I would hand on heart say no more than 15%. You know, the absolute bulk of the work that council does is still in those things that people prioritise: roads, rubbish, recycling, potholes. Huge amount of spend into water, stormwater, wastewater, as well as drinking water. You know, those things are by far the biggest things that council does. And we absolutely have to, and you won't hear me saying we shouldn't. But those are the things that mean it's possible to live here. You know, that you can turn on the tap and drink water, you can flush the toilet and it goes away, that you can drive on a road and have a street light. That makes it possible to live here. The stuff that I'm talking about, the 15%, is the stuff that makes you want to live here. And I'd say that we need both of those things to achieve our aspirations for the city.
Okay, any questions from the floor?
Can I say why I want to live here?
Yes, please do.
Having my say, yes. Well, I came from Australia in 1970 to become a lecturer at Massey University, and while most lecturers were always looking for somewhere else to go, and off they went, I stuck with it because it was such a wonderful campus. Mm-hmm. It's the most beautiful campus in the world because of its horticulture and agriculture connections. And yes, but what I've found is with this big city, little city thing, I'll come here on the buses, but you're not a rail item, so it won't affect you while we're here or anything. But I usually get around on a bicycle. So the bike tracks are important things for me in this town. But the main thing is, in my experience in this small town, you not only go to all the entertainments, you're actually performing in them.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. And we talked about how participation and the ability to participate is a really strong part of the value proposition for the active and passive recreation. It is the benefit of being a small place, is that you know, when you turn up and support, that is, it means something.
The silver man and lady on Cuba. When are we having the man back? And what happened?
So, these are the sculptures that appeared at the top end of Cuba Street. That's a partnership between council and the Public Sculpture Trust. Probably the most political thing council ever debates is our contribution to sculpture. People love them or hate them, usually vocally. I think that's absolutely the point. I would like you to love them or hate them. I want you to talk about them. That's the important thing that sculpture brings to our public life. The man got hit by a car. I don't know whether that was accidental or deliberate. Or potentially, there's a third option there. It has been taken into Tamanua. The Public Sculpture Trust are working with the sculptor to be able to reinstate, but I think the bottom part of it, where it was toppled, was quite damaged. So the sculptor will have to think about how they do that. And then the Sculpture Trust will have to think about how we fund that, although I'm hopeful that there's some insurance for that. Because part of the benefit of that programme is the Public Sculpture Trust fundraise for and fund themselves the sculptures, then they give them back to council, at which point they're covered by our public insurance. So hopefully we'll be able to cover that. But at the same time, the deer disappeared from outside Tamanua from the head of John Doe. That has not been returned yet. If you see a Corten deer lurking in somebody's garden that did not previously have a Corten deer, it belongs to me. Can I have it back, please? That would be great.
Thank you, Rachel. Years ago, there was a discussion of having a lake at the Couchery. Will that ever come back on the council's workload?
The short answer is no. Yeah. No, it won't. I remember, I think I hadn't long been in Palmerston North when that was raised, and I was like, this is an amazing idea. Yeah. Genius! We need a lake. Because we don't have a body of water close by. At the time, it was a partnership with a developer. That was the way that, and I'm happy to cast my memory back to before I was actually on council, but the proposal was a partnership with a developer. That ship has sailed. That yacht has paddled off into the horizon. And nobody is proposing anything like that anymore. Obviously, there is a lake down to Matai Road, I'm going to go with, Sheriff's Road, down that side of town. There is a lake down there. It's not currently used for recreational purposes, and that hasn't been proposed either. Never say never, but the Okota Bay Lake, very unlikely.
There's the lagoon for canoeing.
There is the lagoon, which we do classify as a sporting facility under our plans. Some of you will be aware there are issues with the lagoon that might mean I wouldn't recommend putting your head under or opening your mouth if you did, because we have some contamination in our stormwater and sewerage outflows that also sometimes end up in the lagoon. So at periods of low water intake, we've been topping that up to try and just dilute everything. You know what I'm saying, don't you? So we do have that facility. It is quite well used for canoe polo. You'll go down most Sundays and see people using it to train on. So the recreational value of that kind of open body of water is absolutely important.
Any fish in it?
Yes, there are fish in it, but mostly when the fishing people put them in so the children can catch them for the weekend. Yeah. Sometimes we have eel in there, which is an indicator that the water health is good often, but not always. So I don't know how they get there either. Come through the tubes, maybe. Mm-hmm.
The walkway from Ashurst to Palmerston North. Sorry. How are we going?
Oh, painfully is probably the answer to that one. It's on the books, and council is committed to delivering it. It has been incredibly difficult. Usually when we do that kind of project, we work with the landowners, and the area of land that is kind of the edge of the river has, council has control over that, either the city council or Horizons, and then we can work with that to enable access across it. There are parts of that land between where we've got to with the footpath and Ashurst where the access has been really difficult to procure, and we've got to the point of council saying we would use the Official Works Act, which we hate to do, because you're right up against people's private property rights, But it's something we heard clearly from our community that you wanted was to finish that footpath, to make that connection. It's not safe to send bikes around onto the state highway, which is really high speed through that section. So we are still progressing that, but if that, once you're in the hands of legal, that slows everything. But you thought council was going slow. The only thing slower than council will be when the courts get involved. So we're still trying to pursue it. It will just take time. Similarly, Fielding to Palmy, the connection there, the cycleway shared pathway, we are pursuing that. I know Fielding have finished their bit and they're very proud of it, but theirs was easy and ours includes lots of bridges. So we've made that a plan that goes across all 10 years of the proposed long-term plan, to just chunk it off and keep going until we get it done. So our intention is to finish both of those pathways, connect them up. Both of them might take a full 10 years.
Well, my question's only loosely connected with entertainment, but I think there's an entertainment component. I came here 43 years ago from the north of England, and the one thing I've never understood is why the council doesn't pedestrianise George Street and Cortlandt Place. They scream to be pedestrianised, in my view, with the cafes and entertainment could be there. Why don't you just tell the shops to shut up and pedestrianise those streets? It would be a fantastic thing for Palmerston North, in my view.
Well, I don't disagree. But it would be a kind of career-limiting move. Because it's something we have talked about, and we continue to talk about, particularly Coleman Mall, but also George Street. And the reason that those two come up all the time in this conversation is, if you think about Palmerston North, Coleman Mall and George Street are our smallest streets. They're our narrowest streets. In urban planning terms, they talk about the human scale of streets. Broadway is 30 metres across from shop to shop. 30 metres. Like, it's ridiculous. Palmerston North was designed by the same urban planner who designed Adelaide, I think, from memory. And it was designed on the basis of a population of 200,000 to 250,000 people. That was the, oh, bless him, I'm sure it was a man, aspirational, bold, visionary. But we're probably 100 years away from that. And in the meantime, we're living with streets that are massive and lack human scale. So yes, absolutely, George Street and Coleman Mall should be the first cabs off the rank when we have a population base that would accommodate that. And when we've worked with our retail community particularly to get social license to do that, because change, I don't know if you've noticed this in council, change is incredibly hard to get across the line. Or to, you know, we have pitchforks at dawn for cycleways on Featherston Street at the moment, because businesses feel like we are taking away their customers because they can't park right outside. And they feel that, and that's real. The evidence might not back it up, but that is absolutely how they feel about it. And so when we close a street like George Street, which we do often for events, we have to work really hard with our retail community to make them feel okay about that. And even when we do that work, some of them would still rather close their shop and have the day off, because they don't believe that people would come to that space if the road is closed. And it flies in the face of logic and the evidence, but the reality is that people often do. That we are creatures where we let our hearts lead sometimes, and the way we feel, we think must be what's going to happen. And until we're willing to test that and get some evidence behind it, then we can't, it's difficult to take people on that journey with us. So that's the approach that council has taken. We do close those roads for particular events. We use that as an opportunity to get really good evidence of public behaviour when that happens. Do people still come to those things? Do more people come than would on a normal day? What is the evidence from those retailers about their sales on those days compared to other days? We're trying to build that evidentiary base that enables us to have that conversation with the community. But without that, it's a really hard sell. Whereabouts in the northeast were you from?
Well, I grew up in Cheshire, but we were living in Yorkshire before we came out.
I grew up thinking York was down south.
Oh, well, Cheshire's really in the south.
I was going to say Cheshire's not even I wasn't even counting Cheshire.
Right. Any more questions, please? Yeah.
On the issue of the rivers, this time last year, Ian Fuller, Pastor out of Massey, gave a talk on the issue of rivers and mentioned the change in approach. Rather than trying to constrain the rivers, you've got to accommodate them, and New Zealand rivers are very dynamic, which limits what we can do. And I mentioned on pedestrianisation. I'm also from actually from the north of England, but I was working strategic planning in the UK 50 years ago when they were doing some. It was the early days of pedestrianisation, and the, as you said, the objections from the shopkeepers and so on, and the general public. But then they pedestrianised a couple of streets in the centre of actually in Taunton in Somerset. I was familiar with. The place was packed out with people saying, I don't like those seats, and that fountain's not very good. But it was really big. And I think your problem, your one-off sessions, isn't representative of what it's like when it's settled.
And there's a great New Zealand example in Dunedin, where they proposed the pedestrianisation of George Street, if anybody's familiar with Dunedin. That caused, again, pitchforks at dawn. The mayor lost his job in the election that followed that. I was down there a few months ago to see it, and same. People everywhere going, this is marvellous. If only we'd known this is what they meant. This is fine. But when you're in the middle of that process, and our three-year political cycle doesn't help with this, it's hard to hold to a vision where you're confident of the outcomes, but people don't have the information that you have, and it's hard to take people with you on that. Journey.
But when you look at the evidence, I went back to some of the same places in Britain some years later, and instead of just having one or two experimental pedestrianisations, a large part of the central cities were pedestrianised.
Yes.
So, and they were getting massive use because it was better for pedestrians. They'd linger longer in places and so on.
Which is part of the economic development aspect of this. We're not just doing it because we like footpaths. We're doing it because the evidence shows that the longer people stay in your central city or your retail areas, the more money they spend.
Yeah.
And that's good for business. But we're having trouble convincing business that that would happen. So we'll continue to try.
Yep. Okay. Anyway, no more questions. I will now hand over to our president, chairperson, whatever.
I'm Chris Vandercock, chair of the U3A Manawatu. Right, so I'd like to thank you very much for a wonderful start to our series, our May autumn series on entertainment, because your presentation was entertaining, as well as telling us an awful lot about entertainment. I've been here, I think, about 35 years, and I still had a few more things to learn. It's great to see, you know, in one sort of picture what the council does and what it's responsible for, because you know about one thing or another thing and so on. But to see that overall picture is really very enlightening. And I think we're fortunate to live in a town that has all these amenities. So so thank you very much for coming along and talking to us, for entertaining us indeed.
My pleasure.
We have a little token here for you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you all.